Welcome.
We're more than halfway through the Subtle Knife season.
It's unbelievable how fast this is all going.
And we are getting ready to start Amber Knife soon.
The Amber Knife.
The Amber Spyglass, right after we finish the Subtle Knife series.
Hopefully by the time we start Amber Spyglass, I will learn how to say
Yeah, you always Malefa. Say the Mellifluo, which is something Malefa. Different. Malefa, blah, blah. Hi, I'm Melissa.
Malefa. I'm Will.
And this is Extraneous, the podcast that digs deep into stories you love, comes back with a little something and a lot of boreal puns.
We are on episode 5 of Subtle Knife, the series.
You are listening to a Mischief Media podcast. How should they find other Mischief Media podcasts, Will?
Oh, they should go to mischiefmedia.com and they should listen to Roll 9 3/4. If they're into D&D that's set at Hogwarts,
yeah.
What?
Yeah. And that one, it's been on a little bit of hiatus because we lost some audio when we're trying to fix it. But we promise that now that it's going to be fixed, we're on a new schedule that you'll start getting updates. Like, we only released 10 episodes last year because it is hard getting a D&D podcast going, but it's going to be every other week soon. It's very exciting.
It's so much fun, man. If you like the Pottercast vibe, the LeakyCon vibe, the D&D vibe, get all your vibes.
I want to encourage you to go also listen to Twas the Night.
Oh,
because it's
yeah.
out now. Twas the Night is a beautiful Christmassy radio play that we helped produce with our dear friend Jillian Pensavalle, who is, you may know from Hamilcast, you may also know from True Crime Obsessed. And we helped her produce this really cool play with a bunch of amazing Broadway actors like Chris Jackson and James Monroe Iglehart. Lots of cool names doing some Christmas cheer, and it's all a benefit for the Actors Fund.
It is going to be so great. I cannot wait to listen to it. I love all the people involved with it. Definitely go check that out. And while you are checking out the amazing slate of podcasts at Mischief Media, you should check out the amazing slate of stuff to put on your body and around your person.
We sold a Jordan College sweatshirt.
Oh my gosh.
Privacy makes me not tell you who did it, but I'm really am going to send this person a thank you note. I'm so excited because the Jordan College sweatshirt is so cool.
They're so cool. And Guess what? Everyone else, except for that one person, has the opportunity to purchase a Jordan College sweatshirt.
They still have the opportunity to purchase.
Yeah.
You're like limited to one.
That's good point. That's a good point. Everyone should go check out all of the slate of stuff. The Jordan College shirts, the other His Dark Materials shirt, the Lyra and Will and York and Lee.
Our Stay Extra shirt. There's a Stay Extra shirt.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There is.
I always forget.
It's really cool. It's like blue and yellow. It's very
bold. It's our logo.
Bold. Yeah, it's our logo. That's right. Everyone knows.
Anyway, there's lots of cool stuff there. We're also running a giant fire sale for the end of 2020. Otherwise, I privately call it the 2020 was a dumpster fire sale. We're calling it Buy 2020, you know, big year end, not bye.
Oh, I get it.
Bye, 2020. Bye.
Okay, bye.
You were just trying to get rid of a bunch of stuff. So there's insane sales going on there right now.
Mischiefmerch.com, mischiefmedia.com. Check it all out. Oh, there's just so much good stuff.
All right. Well, shall we get into this episode?
Yeah. Speaking of good stuff, this is a fun episode.
Oh, man. We've watched it twice. Three times?
Three-ish,
I think. We've watched it three times. Yeah. Once the first time just to take it in. Full disclosure, HBO sent us some screeners, which has been really helpful for us being able to put these episodes out on time.
MED.
And a big shout out to our friend at the Measures of Truth podcast, who was like, you know, you can get screeners. I was like, oh, right. Should go do that. So it was really nice. So there had been a bunch of time since we watched it. So we watched it again. And then we watched it again to make our notes. I remember viscerally how tense the battle is at the end. The battle, the fight.
Yes.
Just right. How well done and just how full of dramatic tension. And even though you know these characters exist past this period, so you know they're okay, it still makes you very, very nervous.
We don't really know what sort of state they're going to be in at the end of it, right? Because if it's true to the books, that means that the story is like willing to do a bunch of really bad things to its two main characters, even though they're kids. So while they will probably make it out of the fight that they get into, the sort of accretion of emotional and physical damage that they're going to like accumulate over the course of this series and the next season and maybe even the season after that, if there is a fourth season.
Yeah,
it's going to resonate. Yeah.
You got to do Amber Spyglass in two seasons. You have to. It's too big. You
like,
have to
luxuriate
go to the,
in those places.
There's so much to do. You have to go to the underworld. There's a war between man and the heavens, like, and God and the church, and it's an all universe war. You can't do that in 8 more episodes. The friendly wheelie horses you have to make look really good and not silly at all. It's a big job.
Yeah, no, it totally is.
They're like wheelie antelopes. They're like antelopes with wheels in their body.
Yeah, but they have to be graceful.
Graceful, and they have to speak a different language and also seem wise.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of some of the creatures out of Neverending Story.
Okay.
And I think obviously Neverending Story, the effects on that are fairly dated if you watch it now, but I think they still are effective. And it's almost like they weren't afraid to look silly. They just said, we're just going to create the thing and we're going to trust our audience to see like the meaning behind it, even if it looks silly at first.
We're seeing that start to happen in this series. We're seeing them let the goose do his fancy expositioning.
Yeah, two explainy gooses have an argument. Then we are aware neither of them in this are actually gooses, but
whatever. They're talking about Mary Malone's research and the angel conversation with all the same sort of intellectual heft.
Yeah.
That other directors and other storytellers and other writers may have been tempted to dumb down.
So we could keep talking in big picture, I think, all day, and we do when we're not doing this, but we should jump into the episode itself. And
first, I have to ask you one thing. Yeah, yeah. Have you seen the article that we put on our Twitter? You know how we've been talking about how Lynn and Jopari are basically a fanfic ship right now?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Seems the Mary Sue agrees with us. Thank you very much. It's not just us. It is not just us. Thank you.
Unfortunately, do I have this right? We don't actually see our buddies Jopari and Lynn.
Nope.
Wait, what's their ship name? We should know this.
Lopari? Well, it depends what name we're using for John Parry. So it's Lee and Jopari. So it's either Lopari or G. I like Lopari better.
I think Lopari is going to catch on.
Well, it's also Stanislaus. So Lanislaus? Nah. Mm-hmm. Or Stee.
We'll see. We'll see what the Tumblrverse decides on. But we don't see any of Lopari in this episode.
No. This is a very, very, very concerted episode. There's like one magisterium scene, which we can even talk about now so that we could just focus on one story throughout. There's one magisterium scene. Everything else is about Will, Lyra, Boreal, and Coulter and Malone.
Yeah. And this is actually something that I really liked about this episode and this season as it moves forward. In the first season, out of necessity, and because they decided to bring Will in the first season, there was a lot of jumping around as they sort of built up all these different worlds. And a lot of the episodes felt just kind of like a series of very short vignettes that didn't seem to amount to much, which is what makes an episode like this, I think, especially satisfying, because it was so focused on Lyra and Will and their sort of foils and Mrs. Coulter and Boreal.
Very focused. And that's satisfying. The freedom that they're starting to get now that they've set up their worlds and now that they're trusting the story a little bit. They're not dumbing it down. They're not creating new problems for themselves. That's actually creating a sort of freedom where you can get into the character. It's something I wish whenever I see stories diverge in important ways. For instance, listen, we should have a drinking game for whenever Melissa makes a Harry Potter illusion, but I'm going to make a Harry Potter illusion. Actually, don't, because you'll die. But the end of Harry Potter movies, the final scene, I don't know if they didn't think it was exciting enough for Harry and Voldemort to be pacing around each other in a circle. I think that's thrilling. And I think it's what they're saying to each other is so important. Instead, what we get is this like wackadoo roller coaster ride through Hogwarts. Is fine, I guess. You thought that was more exciting, but it's not. It takes it so far into the caricature thing. So when I see stuff happen like that, it's like, but if you would just trust the source material, then you can do things that are pulling out more character notes and stuff like that. Like,
right.
Like the source material, like it's there for you. Use it. And I feel like they're really doing that now.
I agree. I really agree with that. And in places where they deviate, or not even deviate, but they like expand on what's on the page, they're really staying true to like the soul of the story and really letting the characters breathe as they would exist on the page.
Yeah. So why don't we talk about the magisterium scene, because everything else is connected.
Yeah, I think
also,
that makes sense.
That scene comes right, it's directly connected to the end of the last episode.
Yeah, so the Proud Boys are all gathered on their like 4chan message board, is what this basically is, right?
So true.
These like bros with their black clothing and their like, they might as well be at some sort of like Halo party, right?
God.
Except that they run the entire fucking world.
No shade on Halo parties either.
No, I totally, yeah. You know?
But yeah, they run the world and all they're concerned with is entrenching their power, which is why MacPhail reacts the way he does to Father Graves, who frankly was actually obeying Father MacPhail. He went against him, he lost. But instead he comes up with some crackpot reason to say that his faith, he's full of doubt, to throw him in the dungeons. It's tinpot authoritarian stuff. And it just shows how weak Father MacPhail is. And he comes up with this as a justification for explaining, like, it's an explanation for why the witches killed so many of their men, because Father Graves has doubt. Even by tinpot authoritarian standards, it's overt. And it's like, you almost see it settling on these people, what they've created.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is the problem with a system that doesn't even allow you to debate things or really discuss things in any meaningful way. So I was really struck by the way the Magisterium talks about the anomaly. They don't want to mention it. If the witches hadn't flown through it, they wouldn't mention it. There's no real meaningful discussion about what it is, what it means, what they're going to do about it. It's such a sharp contrast to Mary Malone. And this is a point that I think Mrs. Coulter, like, we see play out in Mrs. Coulter's, like, on her face and in her psyche too, is like, Mary can just talk about it and she can study it. And she gets the farthest out of everybody with what this stuff is, except for like someone like Azrael, who's also, you know, one of Azrael's great strengths is he just faces the thing and deals with it. Mm-hmm. But the Magisterium can't do that. They don't have this freedom of rhetoric and therefore this freedom of thought. And so MacPhail can pull this, you know, Stalinist purge move, and no one can really deny it, because it's like, what are you going to say? Like, well, God told me this. And you're going to say, well, God, actually, I spoke to God too, and he told me something different.
Actually, what God told me was that you have an ugly face. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And MacPhail has managed to justify weaponizing his faith in a fake way, because he believes that his ultimate goal will, like, glorify his faith in the final say.
Yeah.
So it's the classic, like, my plans for the nation are so important that it doesn't matter if I kill everyone to get there. I'm still doing the right thing.
Yeah. This is obviously a key departure from the books. I want to have been in the writer's room at this moment when they decide he's going to put his key power rival in prison because of the witches. Like, I wanted to hear that conversation.
Yeah.
You know, but maybe they just need to show his unraveling and his total lack of rationale for his power without Mrs. Coulter there.
Yeah.
He does then ask Fra Pavel to use his alethiometer to find her. She goes, find her. And Fra Pavel's like, who? Yeah. Who? So he's desperate without her. And he just, you can tell he's about to lock on that she's on the hunt for something very, very powerful.
Yeah. You wonder what the alethiometer is going to say.
Here's the thing. Didn't we say that we thought that Mrs. Coulter knew she was going after the knife at that point? She didn't. She has no idea. She was just going after Lyra.
Yeah.
So that's what she thought was the most powerful thing. It's just simply Lyra.
That's a good point. She says,
yeah, she says, I'm looking for something far greater or whatever. And she leaves. And we thought it was that she knew about the knife. And it's not true. She just meant that she needed to protect Lyra, who now she understands is incredibly important.
But I wonder if we're supposed to infer that she was referring to the knife. Like, I wonder if that is a little
misleading.
A little misleading. I mean, there's been a few things here and there that are just, it reads almost like there's a few different people working on different scripts, and they don't always in the final effort have like a central, but I don't know. It's none of it's fatal, which is nice. You know, when there are little things like that, they're not a big deal. But so Graves gets taken away with everyone on that table has either a lizard or a bug demon. So, like, again, are we the bad guys?
Don't you think if somebody, just one of them, had a fuzzy puppy as a demon, they might feel a little better about themselves? We're the bad guys.
I was like, should we hire like a wombat or something?
Just one giraffe.
Yeah. Like a chinchilla, maybe like three chinchillas.
Also, there's just like the dripping misogyny, like you said. It's just Proud Boy Central over there.
Totally.
Yeah.
Gavin McGinnis.
Hey, gang. Today, we want to let you know about Tavor, which is an app where you can get awesome craft brews and try new and exciting labels really easily. You download the app for iOS or Android, and you can browse the beers that you're interested in and add them to your own personalized crate.
Yeah, so you pay for the beers as you actually add them to your crate. Whenever you're ready, just hit ship, and they are on the way to you for drinking. There's no monthly limit. There's no minimum, so you can buy as much as you want. You can buy as little as you want. Shipping rates don't change based on the order size, so that's great. So you don't have to do a big order to make it worth it.
Tavor works only with independent breweries around the world, so you know they're going to be worth your time and your investment. You can download Tavor today and try it for yourself. Just make sure you use show code EXTRANEOUS when you check out for $10 off after your first order of $25 or more. Again, that's Tavor, T-A-V-O-U-R, in your app store, and use the code EXTRANEOUS. Ms. Coulter. Mrs. Coulter goes to London.
Yeah, she...
These are such fascinating scenes.
They really are. Mm-hmm. They're the scenes you always want and you never get in right. Stuff like this.
Of her looking around in a world unencumbered by the demon. And again, I feel bad for the demon. Oh my God. We also learn how far she can be from her demon in this episode. Like really, really... Not just down the apartment, but like across a city. Like she can go as far as she wants. And now she's in a world where that doesn't matter. And you almost are like... No, you can never be in this world because you have to be with your demon, This poor abused monkey.
Just, we have to think of him as a different monkey. He is not the book monkey. He might be the biggest difference between the book and the show.
I
is
completely
the monkey.
Agree. Mrs. Coulter is hanging out wearing Mrs. Carter's clothes, Agent Carter's clothes in the car, and Boreal's super thrilled. He's like super excited to come back from the coffee shop and hand her the best coffee. It's like a Pret a Manger cup. It's like not good coffee, right? But he's really thrilled about it. So he's just like kind of a grinning schoolboy. He can't wait to show her this world.
Yeah. And his little monologue about our world is so fascinating because it's so, first of all, like you said, he is so gleeful about it. Mm-hmm. Second of all, it's so hypocritical because he's like far more, like twice as many shopping malls, half as many places of worship, a consumerist culture, not guided by faith.
Yeah, all he does is buy things.
Yeah, exactly. It's this whole deal is that he's like basically who Men's Journal is advertising.
He's wearing leisure suits and suede sneakers. Suede sneakers.
Yeah.
He's fine with the consumerism. He's just saying it because he thinks that's what Mrs. Coulter will be revolted by or will be impressed by him saying. But he loves this consumerism. He's got his whole little fancy whiskey shelf, which I want, I have to admit. Huge, huge jealousy. But
where do you think he's gotten there?
Okay, let's do this.
He knew it was going to come to this.
Yeah, he does. So every time a television show shows you a fancy scotch, they show you a Glenlivet, which I don't know why.
Yeah, it's a good Glenlivet 12.
There's so many good Glenlivets, but they show you like a Glenlivet 12 or 18 or something. And it's just like, that's good scotch. That's fine. It's really good scotch. It's not, you know.
Yeah, it's delicious. But it's, you know, it's 60, 70 bucks a bottle. It's not cheap, but it's not high end like...
It's not like the 55-year stuff that we drank at that tour.
Lagavulin.
Oh, Lagavulin. That's the smokier. Yeah.
Go do the. We're really getting into some non-HDM stuff here, but do, if you ever get a chance, do
to
Lagavulin.
Scotland. Yeah.
Yeah. Tasting.
Talisker, I think he's got. I think he's got a. He's definitely got some Laphroaig in there. He may not have only scotch. He may have some Irish whiskeys. But I think he's a single malt guy.
I think he's a single malt guy. I think he has I think he probably has some Macallan. Oh, he might have some Ardbeg. I love Ardbeg.
Yeah, me too. If you're a West Wing fan, this is the one that bothers me the most.
Right.
At the end of season 7, the character Lou says, "Give me a scotch, your best." And he slams down a bottle of, you know, Glenlivet 18 or something, which is a really good but like very standard. That's not the best bar scotch they have at the bar, guarantee. So, what were we saying?
Boreal and Mrs.
It's
Coulter
an alcohol eel.
They're in the car.
Mm-hmm. Drives up to his big fancy house, which if you know London prices, that is a very, very big house to own in London.
He bought his house when he sold his first Muscovite collection.
How does he convince people that these are worth what they're worth if they're not from this world?
They're the same in both worlds, but in Lyra's world, they're not valued the same way. And also Lyra's world is like...
Nobody's buying collections of this stuff.
Yeah, it's like still stuck in the past.
But it's like for study. It's like at the Royal Arctic Institute, that's where that stuff goes. And you get cred for it, but you don't necessarily get rich on it.
I mean, Lyra's world is stuck in like a few different times. It's like a little Victorian. It's mm-hmm. a little modern. Mm-hmm. But parts of it seem like really much more, much older. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the stuff he's just able to go get from like the cultures. Like it's almost like it's still happening right now. Like a lot of his like sort of native population artifacts, he's probably going to the native populations, which in his case are like still kind of going strong. Whereas in our world, you know, they've sort of, the items have been made hundreds of years before. Like he's an antiquarian yeah. who could like go to
into
ancient
the past.
Greece.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, get, and you grab know, them. So yeah. he has things that he says like, this thing costs less than a bread roll. And here it's worth more than half the vaults of Jordan College, which I don't know why you still have it. Shouldn't you have sold it by now? But
well, but he likes this stuff too.
He does. He likes being surrounded. But he's also surrounded by some modern stuff too.
Yeah. We got an interesting list of it on Twitter and then also just looking around of like what's actually in his collection. It's like a piece of the Berlin Wall. It's a piece of the Apollo, which one that went to the moon?
Probably 13 because it's the famous, most famous.
Lucy is there. Lucy, the earliest known skeleton, like hominid skeleton.
Are you sure it's Lucy or is it just an early hominid skeleton? Like those things are in museums. How could they be in there's a certain level.
Because they're not valued as museum worthy in Boreal's world. He got it from his world.
Oh, I wasn't assuming that it was necessarily from his world because obviously the astronaut part is not from his world.
So. Yeah, right. Or the Berlin Wall, right. I would think.
Right. So it's yeah. like a collection. It's like he's trading and selling different. It's just stuff of great value.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it shows from a variety of eras. He likes being surrounded.
There's a piece of the Titanic.
Is there really?
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, that's that big metal piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was... It looks like the size of a weapon on WoW, on World of Warcraft. And that's the only thing my brain could piece it together as. Uh-huh. So I didn't
see.
A
little Easter egg.
Yeah.
So yeah. No, I think it's the Titanic.
So he shows Mrs. Coulter all this, shows her the quote unquote real-time moving images that will capture Lyra's appearance back to say, because she's very confused. Like, what does this have to do? Yeah, they don't have movies.
Right.
Real-time moving images is what he calls his video surveillance system. And, you know, explains to her that he has, and shows her, he has the alethiometer and explains the trap that he has set.
The first of many times when she will react in a way that I don't totally understand, she gets mad. She's like, you stole it from her? I was like, wait a second. You've been trying to steal the alethiometer exactly. from her the entire series. Yeah. What are you talking about, Mrs. Coulter?
Though when you think about it, they're really going hard in that now that she realizes that Lyra is this object of prophecy and destiny and all the stuff, that she's trying to outstrip everybody to get to her and save her and protect her.
Do you think her goal is to prevent her from becoming Eve and like
yes.
bringing about the next fall?
I think she thinks they're one and the same right now. She sees Will in this episode and she doesn't know a thing about him except stay away from him because that's what she thinks about men because of what happened to her.
Oh, interesting.
So she...
Interesting.
And so she thinks that she can protect her and stop her from quote unquote falling. Mm-hmm. She knows that she can stop her from falling to lust, falling to sin. And so I think she sees right now those things one and the same. Obviously, there will be changes in that point of view as time goes on.
She's trying to show like a lot of different emotions around Lyra. And I think part of it also is that like she cares about Lyra, but she also doesn't want Lyra to become Eve. But she also has a lot of jealousy and resentment towards Lyra.
Definitely.
Like Lyra is what she could never be for whatever reason, you know, the wrong childhood, the wrong personality or courage.
Well, that really comes to a head in the way she acts toward Mary. I don't know if this was intentional or not, that it was funny. But one of the funniest things I've ever seen happen in this series is Boreal with his remote control speakers luxuriating, doing like a Sonos ad for his 80s sounding kind of funk.
It's like George Benson or something.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it's just very, I don't know. He feels like in between the cat that caught the canary and like just a big tryhard.
It's so sad to
see this. Let me just put on my music.
Yeah.
Just sit there, Mrs. Coulter, while I wow you with technology.
I mean, we've all been there. We've all been to college. We've all been there.
Have we?
Some of us.
To the playing music on my remote control to set the sexy mood? Have you?
I mean, I have never had a piece of the Titanic and a piece of the Berlin Wall.
You also
to augment my argument.
You know, I don't think you need a piece of the Titanic to have a wireless audio equipment, but I know you, and you did not have a piece of wireless audio equipment.
No. Would not have had the latest in sound technology, home entertainment system.
But it's just legit funny him sitting there, sitting back, trying to be all casual, like, hey, listen to this music.
First of all, she's like, I'm here for you to tell me about Lyra, get as much information as I can, bring her to me. Like, I don't want to fucking talk to you. This is the worst possible scenario to like hang. I have to hang out with you for a while. This, I feel her pain. I'm like, for me, the worst nightmare is just to hang out with somebody like this. Like, yeah. This is so awkward. She has never really heard music like that. She doesn't even seem to really identify that it's music.
No.
She's just like, what is this sound?
She says, Carlo,
like,
can you turn that off?
Yeah, whatever.
Can you just turn this off? Yeah.
And then Boreal mentions that Lyra has been talking to this female physicist, experimental theologian, and
everything changes.
Darkens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For her to darken is quite something.
Yeah. And it's such a mixture of like jealousy, fear, anger, worry that like she's losing her daughter mm-hmm. to whatever this is. And I think on some level, do you think she really does believe that like this stuff is sinful? Like, I'm really worried about my daughter's soul.
I think she did. And that will inform a lot of her actions going into the beginning of Amber Spyglass. Mm-hmm. But over time, again, it's all shifting. I think they're
doing... You don't think that's part of her calculus right now?
No, I think right now, I think what they're doing with Mrs. Coulter is setting up the possibility that she changes the way she changes. She is not the embodiment of evil, as Ruth Wilson called her in the initial information. You know,
yeah,
that has very clearly been abandoned, and they're going for more nuance and more taking in information, and they're trying to make you feel for her and her the way she had to sacrifice her own ego to men's egos just because she happened to live in that other world mm-hmm. when she talks about her history and how she couldn't get published unless she let a man take the credit and all the misogyny of her world, and they're giving you more, and that's all that's doing is fleshing her out so that we understand when she makes bold choices they don't come out of nowhere as they have on other shows. So yeah,
in the book it's a stark turn too. So showing us that process I think makes sense.
I agree, it is kind of stark in the book. You forgive it because yeah, she's such totally. A strong character, but this is maybe better in terms of development. So let's talk about when she decides to go see Mary Malone.
First of all, we get this kind of funny scene where Boreal has like laid out a bunch of clothes for her.
It's so weird.
It's really weird.
Creepy.
It's,
he went and bought these things.
Yeah, it's intimate in a way that Mrs. Coulter is clearly revolted by, and mm-hmm. I feel like we're kind of revolted by
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sitting on the edge of the bed watching her pick clothes. That's a very intimate thing to do with somebody that you're not romantically with.
Yeah, that you're not romantically with, you're not friends with. It's just like you're in his house, in his bedroom.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
It's also real funny, and she picks up the jeans.
Yeah, she's like,
What is this? Get these out of my sight.
mirroring, obviously.
Lyra's
yes. in the book, right?
Whereas in here, she wears pants. It's fine.
Yeah, she's fine.
you know, but you can absolutely understand how Mrs. Coulter is just like, no. And she wears pants. She just doesn't wear jeans.
Yeah, because jeans are used by workers.
But she gets dressed, and I know we've talked about it a little bit, and she shuts the door on the monkey. First of all, imagine you're Carlo alone in that house. You know there's somebody's demon
God,
in a room.
Yeah.
You can't go near that room. That monkey is completely alone. What if he gets away? What if he gets captured by a zoo? Like, what? How could you leave how could your precious soul you just leave alone?
Boreal confronts her when she's not confronts, but
asks.
Yeah. When she's coming down the stairs and she says, what, have you never met a woman with self-control before?
That's a lot.
Yeah. There's so much there.
So much to unpack. Does she say she's a witch? Does it confirm that she went and did the witch ritual?
I think so.
Or is she just saying this is like being a witch?
Yeah. Is there something about the ritual, like the location of the ritual doesn't matter. What matters is finding that level of self-control. But the witches, they find a way to like sever the physical
bond. Yeah. In every instance we see in the books, it's someplace demons can't go. The witch's place, it's someplace demons can't go. For Lyra, mm-hmm. it's someplace demons can't go. There are more things in the previous books, the ones that are coming out now, that are places where demons can't go. So she must have, whether it's the witch place or whatever, found one of these places, but it does take self-control to do it. heartbreaking self-control.
Yeah.
But to leave your demon alone. And now she can't seem to reestablish that bond. Heartbreaking.
It is.
And it's mirrored in the books that he's writing now.
Really?
Yeah, it's really sad. Mm. Lyra and Pan are going through some stuff. And it makes you really, you don't even want to read it because it makes you so mad.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
God. And this poor monkey, it can't find somebody else, you know? It's not like it can find a person who's going to actually love it. It's just so alone in the world. Truly alone.
And also he knows that he has her life in his hands. He could kill himself and it would kill her.
Yeah.
So how do you cause your demon to be that depressed? That's not a wise choice. None of this is wise or thought out by her. I think she just wanted to feel what it was like to walk around untethered.
Yeah. And I think she sees her demon as a manifestation of her
carnal desires.
Yeah. Yeah. And all that, her creativity that's stifled, mm-hmm. her sexual desires that are stifled or that she's been punished for.
Right.
All of it. And so she really resents him.
What else do you think she did before she came home? Do you think she, I don't know, went to a bookstore? Do you think she, what else did she do while she was being just a woman out in the world? First of all, did she pass her driving test? How did she just ask Charles Leitrim or whoever he is, Boreal, the Exploreal, the original, for the car keys and he just gave them to her? She's going to die.
This is wild. That this is a completely, this is never explained at all.
Yeah.
And they just do it. It's like,
never mind if she can drive.
I'll drive. Can you drive? Have you ever seen a car before?
Even if she can, Lyra says they have like not as fast cars.
That's
she
true.
Doesn't know traffic rules. What if she gets arrested? What if she kills somebody?
She's driving in London, right?
Yeah, no, it was bad.
Or is it Oxford? She's driving in Oxford.
In Oxford.
But still, that's a city.
Plenty busy.
And to answer your question, I think she just came straight back. She does not, she seems like she would be all impressed with herself for being so self-controlled that she would want to come straight back. Also, Lyra might have come in the meantime. So.
Right. So I was just imagining what she might have done about the town. So at Mary Malone's office, she turns around. She's in her office. Mary Malone walks in. Yeah, and
Mary
sees,
Malone is so sick of people just showing up.
How many times in this series? Mary Malone's like, oh, who's in my office now? But she says like Ms. Malone and she goes, doctor. And you can see the look. Mm. The look on Mrs. Coulter's face.
Yeah, because there's so much there. It's the woman being a doctor. It's this woman who works for a living and wears jeans, addressing her in like such a
casual manner.
Yeah, like, mm-hmm. you know, Mrs. Coulter's world, Lyra always is quick to remind us, is very hierarchical. It's mm-hmm. very rigid socially. And most people do not even get to address Mrs. Coulter. And mm-hmm. when they do, they have to be very respectful or there's like real physical consequences.
Yeah.
This is not true in modern day Oxford, you know. Mary Malone has no time for that. She's like another person in a fancy blazer in my office.
Yeah. So they have this conversation about Lyra and just the seething white hot rage that's coming off Mrs. Coulter when she not only hears this woman who has everything that she wants.
Yeah.
Status, an interesting job. You know, she calls herself an experimental theologian, which confuses Mary. Mm-hmm. But when she sort of apologizes for Lyra's presence, Mary's like, no, no, no. She's the most interesting person I've met in a long time. She has ideas about the morality of dark matter and her grasp on quantum physics is astonishing. And you can just see that this woman has a stronger connection with her daughter that, you know, like
yeah.
later in the episode, she's saying to Lyra, I will teach you, because she understands now that this is what Lyra wants.
Mm.
And the kind of rage she has that this woman has the audacity to connect with her daughter over dust.
In a non-judgmental way. Mm-hmm. Also, Mary Malone, like, I don't know what level the experimental theology is at in Lyra's world, mm-hmm. but like, think about like modern day academia and like modern day specialization, for better or worse, like, Mary Malone is like an actual physicist. She knows actual physics. She knows actual things far, far beyond anything Mrs. Coulter might know. And so Mrs. Coulter might be used to being like the smartest and most learned person in the room. But I wonder if she senses that, like, at least when it comes to physics, it's like I just graduated high school and
right.
she's, you know, been doing university level research for a decade or more.
Totally. Mary Malone asks her, like, oh, you said you were an experimental theologian.
Yeah, theologian.
She goes, where would you say theology comes into science? And Mrs. Coulter shoots back right away. Where does it not? And there's this charged moment between them because Mary is going to be the key between science and theology. And you can see her putting all those pieces together in her head.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's the exact conversation that, like, if Einstein and Newton met or something.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Newton would have seen no contradiction between his very deep religious faith and his, you know, scientific studies.
Yeah. And Mrs. Coulter is a little bit of a stand-in for Philip Pullman here, saying, yeah, science and faith can exist. This whole series, right, is about that science and faith can exist and complement each other, and they don't have to be at war with each other, and trying to drown that out gets us into a lot of trouble. And then she leaves.
And then she leaves. Yeah, she pulls a Batman and just disappears. So Mary is, like, typing in, she's Googling experimental theology, Marissa Coulter, you know, WTF, gets nothing. You know,
Google's like, did you mean something else? Because I don't think it's here.
And then her computer starts talking to her. The angels, they say...
The dust comes alive.
The dust comes
alive. So, like, she must think she's crazy at this point. And this is where faith comes in. Like, she just has to go with it.
Yeah, I would just assume that I was literally having visions or something.
Totally.
But, like, not in a God is talking to me kind of way. Like, I need to...
When I wake up, I'm getting a CAT scan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the voices say, you must play the serpent. You must make a journey that stops at a hornbeam, which, oh my goodness. Is there only one hornbeam in Oxford? Is there just the one?
Isn't the whole thing about hornbeam trees that, like, they're like filler trees that are on every single corner of every city?
Could you have been a little bit more specific, angels? We know you're doing this whole mystical thing, it works for you, this whole vague.
It's basically, the angels are trying to just give her directions, but they don't know how to do it in not like the most dramatic way.
No. When you go down the street, you're going to see a red box on the corner. You don't want that one. You want the next one. It's the next one. The next one looks like it's going to go right, but it really goes left. And when you hit that one, there's a tree. And then you got to turn around and spin around three times. It's like the angels are a little bit like that guy.
Totally.
Anyway, they tell her, we will not speak again in this world, and then this equipment will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
You're driving me crazy here. Jesus Christ.
Okay. So then they said, the angels say, we will not speak again in this world, and all the equipment breaks. This message will self-destruct.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was wondering if we were going to get like an actual explosion scene.
I really did too. I wonder about the red light. Does red mean broken? But was this red light installed just in case all the equipment broke? But it was
a
It was a very nice visual, at least.
Yeah.
And she just goes home, gets her stuff. You can see her carrying a little I-Ching box. So she heads toward the only hornbeam in Oxford. And she deceives the guardian, as it told her to do.
Mm-hmm.
Says that she's Mrs. Coulter. She's good. She's suave.
Yeah. Well, she kind of got bailed out of that one a little bit.
Yeah.
The guard's like, oh, are you Mrs. Coulter? She's like, yes.
Yeah.
I am Mrs. Coulter.
Yes, yes.
Better let me inside that tent.
Or I'll glower at you. Huh. We did skip that she actually is at home with her sister comes and sees her again.
Yeah. Again, very random choice. Don't hate it. Just
a little discussion.
Don't understand where it's going exactly. But
maybe it was to just give us a little bit more of the idea of her history. Her sister is so surprised that the Bible is out, that she's reading about the serpent, and just a little bit more grounding of who she is, I guess. Maybe the sister's going to be helpful in the end.
That's very possible. Yeah, I don't hate it.
The line that we get from her Bible is, the serpent was more crafty than any of the wild animals, and she thinks crafty. She must be very concerned about what she might have to do.
Yeah.
The rest of the action of this episode.
Will is practicing with the knife. Gets mad, throws it, sticks all the way into the wall. Obviously, he doesn't want to be doing that too often.
Ooh.
Someone comes around the corner and gets knifed.
In another world.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it needs intention to actually open, but he's got to be careful. That could really cut anything. So maybe
cut anything.
Maybe careful with the rage. We talk a lot about the sheath. Like, how can the sheath hold it? And you were saying the sheath must be so perfectly balanced in that sheath to not touch the sides.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It can't stop it. It just has to balance it.
Yeah.
Which is a nice little, you know, it's like a little Zen kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you cannot defeat the knife. You must just hold the knife.
Defeat the knife. Nice little sheath, though. So they're doing their practicing. They're doing their rudimentary drawing with their chalk to figure out where to go. And they try to make the worlds match up. And sure enough, because everything is everything, the tower is Leitrim's house in the other world.
Yes, everything is everything.
Everything is everything.
Yeah. So they have to go into the tower. But first, we get a little discovery of Tullio.
They're making a big point to show the devastation that Angelica and Paolo feel, because it will inform a dramatic exit from Chitakaze later.
Yeah.
But it's well done. Bella Ramsey is excellent. Her little friend, I don't know her name, is excellent. They very smartly are continuing to show Will's bandages covered, like leaking blood.
Yes.
He's not okay. He's still leaking blood as a major. It almost gets to the point in the books where you're like, okay, I know he's bleeding. Stop. I don't want to read about his bleeding anymore. I know he's bleeding. So I'm glad they're keeping that up.
Yeah. So Will and Lyra realize Anpan and his big fat panda face.
Big fat pan. Get it? Panda. Oh, why do you think he's a panda so much right now?
I think it's cute.
Or you don't think it has anything to do with like who Lyra is right now? Discovering, bumbling a little.
Yeah. But she's also in kind of like caretaker mode. It's like that is one of Pan's safe incarnations. It's the panda. Like he goes there when he feels safe. Mm-hmm. And Lyra feels that way around Will right now. But like they have their place. They kind of know their way around their house. I'm sure they've found little routines to like get them through the days. Mm-hmm. They have a shared purpose. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I wonder if that reflects like Lyra is kind of at peace, even as they're about to do this kind of big, scary thing.
Also, a quick note about Will. He's a lefty in the show. He's a righty in the book. He's got the knife in his right hand and he loses his left hand fingers in the book. And here it's switched. I don't know if that means Amir Wilson is a lefty and it's easier or they just liked the symmetry. I don't know. So Will is struggling with the Tulio thing. He doesn't want to hurt anybody else. And him and Lyra and Pan sit and discuss the necessity of doing what he had to do and how it was self-defense and they don't want to hurt anybody and neither does Lyra and it's setting up unfortunate things that are going in their future. But yeah.
The subsequent scene with Will and the knife when they break into Boreal's house, you could see it going very differently if it was a different knife bearer, if it was just like a sort of an angry 14-year-old boy who's really excited, he has this awesome weapon, and just goes in there and like starts killing people, you know, because he doesn't even really think about what he's doing, or he gets angry and he just like slashes out at Boreal or at Mrs. Coulter or the monkey, because he doesn't or know how demons work.
He could have killed Mrs. Coulter by slashing the heart of the monkey.
Instantly. And easily. It would have felt no resistance, mm-mm, you know. The fact that he doesn't do that is that's one of the reasons that he's been chosen as the bearer, is he has that sort of inner strength. Yep. But also, this interaction with Tulio, where he kind of comes face to face with, you know, the consequences of his actions.
And he feels about them. He feels. So as they're getting ready to make their attack on Tower Boreal, Mrs. Coulter and Boreal are hanging and drinking. And Boreal commits, just to remind us that he is still a super arrogant, misogynistic douchebag, does like three different crappy things to Marissa in the span of about a minute. She's all mad about Malone. She's ranting about it. And he says that he found her arrogant and because of all her knowledge and whatnot. Marissa looks at him and says, do you find me arrogant? Because that's the logical step. That must mean I'm arrogant. And he says, no, of course not. We're just patronizing. And then he says, take a breath. You're clearly upset. Which is like telling a woman to smile, like hands her a drink, sort of pat pat. That really hit me hard. And they have this little altercation.
Yeah, they do, where Mrs. Coulter really feels like she needs to hurt Boreal. She needs to shut down this path of thinking from Boreal, but also there's something in her that wants to lash out when she feels these feelings of inadequacy or when she's confronted with someone who's like more free than she is or who sort of rejects her, who is living in a way that she's never allowed herself to live or has never been allowed to live. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it before where she like, you know, she wants to see an excision back in Bullvanger because I think it fills this like kind of sadistic need, this like taste for violence in her.
Right.
And I think that the way she attacks Boreal here, well, a lot of it is true, is also her channeling her own resentment and anger from the day's events at Boreal in a way that she really knows is going to like emotionally hurt him in a way he'll...
Yeah, and it's not actually wise of her because he's the one that's trying to trap Lyra. He has power right now. He knows things that she doesn't. He has things that she doesn't there, you know? But she can't stop herself. She accuses him of trying to add her to his collection of trinkets. She berates him for quote-unquote collecting trinkets in that world and also says that the knowledge that this world has, their world is thirsty for, and kind of berates him for holding it to himself, which seems like...
Yeah, again, totally contradictory to everything we've known about herself and life and work up until this point. Where it's like her whole deal is that she's preventing that knowledge from happening.
Yeah. She might have just been finding a way to cut him at that moment, or that's just possible. Might have made interesting television, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
But then she tells him, if you actually got me, you wouldn't begin to know what to do with me, which is accurate and such a deep burn.
Oh, totally. And it totally tracks why Boreal is so exasperated with Asriel. You know, the opposite of the reason that Lee Scoresby doesn't like Asriel. Like, he is just jealous. Asriel has Mrs. Coulter. They have a connection and he can't have it, no matter how rich he gets, no matter how, you know, fancy he makes his suits or how, I don't know. I don't even know what.
No, he can't. It's this is literally what he wants. And like the thing he's trying so hard for. And she's saying, there's nothing you can do to be worthy of me.
Yeah.
It's such a cut.
It's like if Boreal would just chill out and find a different object of his affection, I feel like he would be happy. And I feel like he would stop doing all these bad things. And he would just like, he could just like ease off and just be kind of a dick instead. You know, just kind of like a tool, a rich jerk.
Boreal Soreal.
Boreal is Soreal.
Boreal Boreal.
Boreal Boreal.
Boreal the Bachelorial. Exactly. Hmm. Boreal the Perennial Bachelorial. All right. So then we get to the main event. Lyra shows up. Where's my lithiometer? Very direct.
Yeah. I love she just rings the doorbell. I mean, I know that's the plan, but still, it's like, it's the most Lyra way to.
It's just coming right in the front door. Yeah. Will, he's got this knife that cuts through worlds. If he had just cut through a couple of inches closer.
I know.
And just taken the damn thing. You just want to yell at him. What are you doing? Just take it. But I guess that doesn't make for suspense.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's probably scarier in the moment.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
Think through these things. But yeah. Also, the line about the rule that he has to close up the windows that he opens. It's like, you're allowed to leave it open for like
a minute.
A minute, right?
Especially when your life is at stake. But don't close the one where you go into Oxford. Yeah, right. Don't close that
leave
one.
Leave that one open.
Make sure you, yeah, no, it's nuts. That's.
Yeah, but again, it has to be a more dramatic scene.
Yeah, exactly. So he is confronted with Mrs. Coulter later saying to Lyra, so that was your mother. So the battle for the alethiometer begins.
Yeah, as soon as Lyra hears the monkey grab the alethiometer, she knows that monkey. She just, again, just Lyra.
But she doesn't at that moment. She doesn't know it's the monkey. She runs downstairs. She just hears a noise and then she's surprised to see Mrs. Coulter.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Imagine her stomach at that moment of all things to expect. Mrs. Coulter standing there.
Your mother, who she hates. Mm-hmm. Who is a hateful person.
Is a hateful person.
I will say this unequivocally. I am not here. I mean, I'm fascinated to see what the series does with her, but I am not here for Mrs. Coulter as an ambivalent figure. I think she is a hateful, twisted person.
Agreed.
There may be reasons for that. She may have been like broken as a kid irreparably.
I agree. I'm down for the complication and the showing the complication, but I'm not down for her. Like, she does have a redemptive arc in a way. Mm-hmm. I think I'm never going to like her.
Right. She's not someone whose net contribution to existence is like on the positive. So Lyra rushes towards danger because that's just what she does. You got to appreciate that, right?
No,
she like runs into the house.
As a Gryffindor.
Yeah, right.
I can tell you.
Yeah.
She runs, run first, think later.
Right.
And then, so Boreal distracts Will and Lyra and Mrs. Coulter have a confrontation where Mrs. Coulter is trying to be Mary Malone to her, trying to talk to her about dust, trying to give her the lithiometer, tell her the things that she knows, and she's trying to warn her off Will. And Lyra instead, six pan on the monkey.
Yeah, who in mid-leap turns into the Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
And the monkey can't change. The monkey's done changing. This is a huge advantage that
he didn't take advantage last time.
Yeah, he didn't. He didn't know, mm-hmm. but he's seen a lot since then, mm-hmm. especially in the books. Man, Bookpan has seen everything Lyra's seen.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of death.
And they have the scene that is a very direct mirror to the openings, to the first battle they have. And it's really uncomfortable, but it's because it's Lyra acting like Mrs. Coulter, but it's also kind of satisfying seeing Pan get the better of the monkey, even though I'm so sad because the monkey is just doing his best.
The monkey is suffering.
The monkey's just doing his best. Somebody leave the monkey alone. Yeah. He's just trying to get his human to like him.
So Meanwhile, Boreal and Will are kind of in this epic battle that I just want to point out would not be an epic battle if Will wasn't A, grievously wounded, and B, refusing to really fight back in any meaningful way. Because like Will could just kill Boreal at easily. Any time. And he's holding back. When Boreal threatens Will's mother, same. I really thought they were going to change Boreal's death
same.
To make it an end. Mm-hmm. He doesn't. He does. He cuts in half the little statue thing, which I'm such a weirdo. I always feel bad when something like that happens.
I don't.
I'm like, no, I know it's fake.
It's
I know
a it's, rock.
Yeah. I would have put it down and be like, I'll kill you, but I'm not going to destroy this piece of history.
Kill the piece of history. Anyway, so they're having their fight. And Will shakes Lyra out of it, says, you know, gets them out. Pan makes it just in time. The monkey, again, like, hits the wall or something. This poor monkey.
Yeah.
Because he's trying. What would have happened if the monkey had made it through?
And then the thing closed up?
Is that too far?
Is there? I don't know if there is a too far at this point. Once the physical tether is severed, it's just severed.
But wow, no, we know it's not too far because Pan and Lyra are in different worlds at points.
Right.
Right, so it's not too far. But could you imagine a new movie where, a new show where they sort of start getting along with the monkey and walking around with the monkey?
He's like, well, I'm free.
Well, he's like, you can have a better life. Anyway, hashtag free the monkey. So they make it out and back in Chitagatse, Will's sitting there kind of recovering and Lyra comes in with coffee. Mm. Will's like, oh, that was your mother.
Pan is like sauntering in, biceps first.
I know.
He's just like, yeah, he's handled that.
He's got a swagger to him. I think they did that. Like, I think that's real. I think they did
Pan's too.
Like, what? Bring it. What? I'm all that. I'm a big fat panda face.
I'm a big chubby fat panda face.
And you can't mess with me.
Yeah, I love that he doesn't turn into a bulldog. He doesn't turn into his Wolverine form. He's sauntering in his big fat panda face.
Seriously, go watch the scene again so you can see it. It's funny. Really good. Yeah.
Oh, Pan, we love you.
So in this scene, Will and Lyra are kind of talking over things, and Will is amazed that that's her mother because Lyra's never like that. And Lyra says, I don't want to be like that. I want to be like Ma Costa or Lee Scoresby. And Will says, you don't need to be like anyone else. They'd be lucky to be anything like you. And the little teenage hearts go aflutter because they are already clearly in love.
Oh, yeah. This is a big one. I mean, this, not that there is any doubt, but Lyra really did choose Will. She ran into danger to save him, and then she chose Will over Mrs. Coulter, over her mother. There was never any doubt. She was kind of offered, it probably would have been fake to an extent, but like a get out of jail free card. Like Mrs. Coulter was saying, like, you can come back with me. We can reset. It's like all the horrible events of the last, you know, few months never happened. And Lyra's like, no, absolutely not. You're bad. I'm with Will.
And one last bit, Marisa and Boreal. Who is the Luzoriel?
Boreal the Luzoriel.
Sitting around talking about how they need to follow them, but Boreal says we can't. And this crossroad world is just full of stuff that we can't go near. And Mrs. Coulter is already formulating a plan about the specters, which dust. She calls it dust.
Oh, she's speaking in parcel tongue. It's so painful. Yeah. I will say Ruth Wilson's overacting this whole episode. I know I've gone back and forth on her. Man, it's bad. I'm just going to straight up say her performance this episode. Most of the performances in this episode were great. Hers was really painful.
I think only in moments. I think this dust thing, when she realizes the specters are after dust, a little much.
I found most of it was not that bad, but I found most of it to be pretty bad, in my opinion.
Okay.
I was like, oh, man, what is her deal?
It's a lot. I mean, and Mrs. Coulter is a lot. And maybe this is how we stay not liking her.
Yeah. I mean, if that may be the goal.
It might be too relatable.
She's supposed to be broiling with all these kind of ugly emotions.
Yeah. So we end with Boreal and Mrs. Coulter about to go back to Chitagatse with Mrs. Coulter doing her thing. Mm-hmm. Lyra and Will think they're in the clear. She promises only to ever use the alethiometer to help him find his father. And Mary Malone
steps into another world.
And that's that.
Extra award?
Let me think. My extra awards for Pan. With his little, like, yeah, just that moment. Seriously, go watch that moment again. Who's yours?
Boreal and his like...
Sonos equipment.
Yeah. Boreal the seducer.
Suede sneakers. Yeah. That's all I gotta say. Suede sneakers and leisure couch.
He's like a horny undergrad. Yeah. He's like a rich, like, you know, look what my dad bought me kind of thing. Man, we did it. 5 episodes in.
Only 3 episodes left. 3 weeks left of
this. Oh, man. This is fun. It's fun watching these. They're good. They're good episodes.
They are really good. All right, so there's only 2 episodes left. Episodes 6 and 7, that's it.
Wow. I feel like there's more to the book. Although now that I'm like going over the events in my head, there's not a lot left from the book.
Nope.
We're getting down to it.
All right, well, if you'd like to hear more from us, make sure to check out our Patreon.
Yeah, check out our Patreon. Patreon.com/makingmischief.
You have extra content. You have an access to a Discord that we all chat in. Lots of stuff. You hear us talk about it every week.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/makingmischief.
It's awesome. We'll see you there.
It's awesome. We hope that you're safe and happy and you're making it through this horrible period as best you can. And we will see y'all soon.
We will indeed. See you next week.
But only
if you stay
extra.